We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You are listening to KC Sports Network, the number one podcast network for today's Kansas City sports fans. With former players from your favorite teams, informed perspectives, and former insiders, this is the place for you. KC Sports Network is proudly presented by M-Prize Bank, your partner in possible.
What is up? Welcome into Mizzou That's Who here on the Kansas City Sports Network. I am one of your wonderful co-hosts, Tucker Franklin, joined as always by Gabe DeArmond and Maggie Johnson. Mizzou coming off a tough loss at home. I think I saw it described as heartbreaking some people. Not me. I wouldn't have necessarily said heartbreaking. It's one of those where you're playing with house money against the number one team in the country. With the Georgia Bulldogs. Close game all the way through. Mizzou had a lead in the fourth quarter. Had a lead with, I can't remember necessarily the timing of it, but, I mean, they had a lead late in that game. Yeah, had a lead late in that game. And if you would have told me Missouri would have had a lead late in the game, I would have said, okay, what happened to Stetson Bennett? What happened to all the guys that they had? But, no, Missouri played well, stuck in there with them, made me feel a little bit better. We'll get into that more. But, Gabe, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Ready to go again. You know, it was fun to be at Faro for a game that felt like a big game because it had been a minute.
I have to admit on this podcast, I was invited to go to that game. Someone said, "Hey, I have a ticket for you. You can come to the game." And I said, "Chiefs play the next day. It's a primetime game. It'd be late for me getting back." Kind of weighed my pros and cons, and I said, "You know, I probably just going to stick this one out. If the Chiefs maybe had the Monday night game like they do this week, maybe that's a game that I say, you know what, let's just go. Let's go and have some fun." Tough one for me that I didn't take advantage of that opportunity. But Maggie, you were there, correct?
I was there. Was given tickets and I did attend the game. And it was amazing. It is the best I've seen for a look. I mean, some people were saying the Texas A&M game. I'd honestly maybe even go back to the 2010 OU game is what I would maybe compare it to. And I mean, I was tweeting all week. I was like, get your butts to Faro Field. There's no reason. And it's like, I understood. We just like were heartbroken. Auburn was more heartbreaking for me because we won. We had that game won against the team that we are better than, you know, that one was a little worse. I used the word deflating. I felt more deflated after this win. And it was just like, cause we were up and you know, you were so excited. And then couple things happen and then you're down and I don't know. It's hard, but it's exciting to see them moving in a positive direction because I think that's probably the takeaway of the week for me.
I think so too. That was a game that really no expectations for Mizzou coming in, right? I mean, we recorded a whole podcast and didn't even focus on that game because we said, okay, Mizzou's 29 point dogs. It's not going to be close. They came out, they played really well on the defensive side of the ball. For me, though, I've turned into a pessimist again just because a couple times, you know, you take a couple shots, then you get a little shy is basically kind of what I like to describe. And I never really thought Mizzou was going to win that game. I always thought that something was going to happen, that Georgia was going to come out. Georgia is much like Alabama where they can turn it on when they need to. You saw Alabama do that in the Arkansas game when that game got close. Alabama was just like, okay, we're going to score touchdowns now. And that's what happened with Georgia. So Gabe, I'm kind of curious to like your thoughts of like, what was the feeling like, you know, from the press box of like, was this game ever, did you ever feel like Mizzou was going to win that game, or did it always feel like Georgia was going to kind of figure it out and find a way to win?
Yeah, I late second quarter, when Cody Schrader runs for 63 yards and gets caught on the 6-inch line. And by the way, credit to whoever the Georgia dude was who chased him down, because a lot of guys don't do that, right? Chased him down on the 6-inch line, and they got a false start on the next play. And I said then, I'm like, that feels like something that we're going to remember. Because at 20-3, like if it's 20-3, Georgia has to be pretty close to perfect, because that's a 3-score game. At 16-3, they're going, hey, we're still 2 plays. We need 6 minutes to do this. It's not that big a deal. Then when Missouri came out and traded punches a little bit with them in the third quarter, I mean, when they're up, what was it, 19-9, started thinking, there's a shot here, right? I will admit to during the third quarter, DMing and texting with the general manager at Harpo's and saying, yo, Chase said he was going to pay for the tab and I'd like to do our post-game show from down there. Is it doable? And they were going to give me a DJ booth. I was going to set up there if Missouri won. I said, obviously, we'll wait and see. But if they hang on, I'll text you when I'm on my way. And we had it set up. Appreciate them, thinking about it, doing it. But they kind of hit a wall. And there was never a point in the second half where I felt like this is going Missouri's way. It just kind of seemed like you just kept looking up at the clock going, can it go any faster? It wasn't going to work.
No, first off, shout out to Chase Daniel and Big Cat, because that was pretty awesome. It's pretty awesome that he sent the $2,000 anyways, Big Cat did. So shout out to him. Doubt he's listening, but you know, if you want to listen.
I don't know. I've heard he's a big Mizzou Tattoo fan.
So that was really awesome. I also, around the second, was feeling out of the box, like out of myself, positive a little bit. People kept messaging me because I have a pretty wide range of followers from different fan bases on Twitter. And they're all like, oh my gosh, Maggie's probably freaking out. What's happening in Columbia? Like all of these things. And I'm just like, stop talking to me. It's so early in this game. And I was, I've seen so much heartbreak. And then you're right, Gabe, there were just things that started happening, like the hands to the face call. And you know, I'm pretty sure the no call on Burden's pass interference, I think, was in the third. I remember if that was the second or the third.
I think that was in the third, because that's the direction they were going. Yeah.
Yes, and everything just kept kind of seeming like, okay, that is not working in our favor. And then we just started letting them move the ball fast. So then when we got down, they scored. Even when they scored and we had 4 minutes left, and then it just started looking like a different team that had been playing. We did we have 4 minutes left. We're on, what, the 35? I'm like, why are we not? Yeah. Oh, 25, I'm sorry. Why are we not running the ball and taking some time off the clock? You know, playing a 6-yard at a time thing and to get down the field. It just felt weird. It felt like we were setting ourselves up to lose. And after Georgia scored that touchdown, this is something I didn't like either. Fans just started up the aisles. You saw them go. And I'm like, there's still 4 minutes left in this game. Like,
I wouldn't have left at that point, but I also had no expectation. That game was over. I had no expectation Missouri could go down the field and score.
And that was, Maggie, the drive you're talking about, right? They were still up 3. And I think Drinkwitz threw the ball 3 straight times?
No, we were down.
That was after Georgia went up 26-20.
Okay.
They got within 3 with like 9:50 left. They took the lead with 4:03 left.
So I think I'm thinking of the drive that like after the offensive drive after Georgia got within 3 was not a very good drive either.
I mean, most of the offensive drives were not particularly good.
That's fair.
We can harp on play calling, and I'm sure we'll talk about the last drive because I didn't agree with the strategy. But I don't know what you're going to call that works when, I mean, the numbers look good rushing, but it was largely about 3 plays. Mm-hmm. They threw the ball pretty well in the first half. But once Dominic Lovett was out of that game, there was nothing that worked on offense. I mean, they were – once Georgia went up four and you knew Missouri needed a touchdown, I just didn't see how it was doable.
It felt almost like the end of the Kentucky game last year when we blocked the field goal and we got the ball back and we couldn't do anything. We just couldn't – we couldn't move. And that's exactly how it felt. Deja vu moments.
I think shout out to Harrison Meavis, by the way, for after Absolutely. A catastrophic game for him to come out and nail a 56 yarder and nail a couple 50 yarders, I think is mm-hmm. what he ended up with. And the swag with what he would nail those with and then walk off the field. You
the
would
3 second
guessed.
Video of the strut is I've watched it seriously like 85 times. It's amazing. Same.
You would not have guessed that that guy missed a 26 yarder the day or the week before the for a game, but shout out to him. That was the best. He's the best offensive player for Missouri right now. Mm-hmm. Might actually be the leading scorer.
I saw somewhere that in this game, he outscored Oregon and South Carolina's points combined against Georgia.
I mean, he was leading Georgia when the fourth quarter started. He was ahead of Georgia 16-12 at the start of the fourth quarter.
There's not a lot of college kickers. I spend a lot of time watching college football. My girlfriend Tara even mentioned, she's like, the kickers in college football aren't as good as they are in the NFL. And I was like, no. Like
neither, by the way, is any other position.
Right. Yes. Like, this isn't as good as a football as the NFL. And I said, no, it's not. So why do you watch
it? But it's better than like Blue Valley, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the best of high school players. It's right. The NFL is the best of the college players. No, I think that game was certainly it was fun to see how the other half live. Right. I think is kind of how you can describe that game for a little bit. People got upset at me because I tweeted out something like, man, this drive has Georgia touchdown written all over it. And it was Missouri was still up 10 and they gave the ball right back without getting a field goal. And I was just like, that this has Georgia touchdown written all over it. People were like, oh, stop being so negative. It'll be okay. But then when I tweet something positive, they're just like, hey, don't you remember? Don't you remember who you were a fan of? It's just like, I can't win.
Be a realist.
I know. Yeah.
But I mean, that's what good teams do. You know, right. I mean, good teams win that game by playing six good minutes. And bad teams talk about how they were two plays away from winning that game. I mean, that's the difference between being where Georgia is and not being where Georgia is at this point. And, you know,
watching that game, too, it's like good teams versus bad teams. Yes. But I wouldn't call us like bad because I don't think that's fair to the defense. To be perfectly honest with you, we can say that we're 50% bad or whatever we want to say. But that defense deserves we're a good half team. The defense deserves a lot of credit, and I would not be able to sleep at night if I was like, our defense is bad. They don't deserve that.
Yeah, no, that was the first time this season I came away from a game saying, oh, wait, this defense is actually good. Mm-hmm. Like, because I wasn't sure through the first four games. I think it's actually a good defense. I think also Stetson Bennett was bad in that game.
Yeah,
like, I mean, he had some open guy. He had opportunities, and I it was really – there were at least five or six times where I just said, how's he not make that throw?
Well, his receivers bailed him out a lot in the fourth, too. They made some great catches.
Those tight ends are special.
They're monsters. And, I mean, without them, if he's throwing to regular tight ends or whatever, I mean, they probably don't win that game. But they made some amazing catches. I was in the stands for the Brock Bowers catch. And I went, did he catch that? This because, like, it was such a good catch. Yeah. And it was super far away from where I was, but... no, they're monsters.
Was it Bowers or was it Darnell Washington where that he caught the ball at the same time as hitting? I can't. It was a Chris Abrams drain that hit him at the same time. Yeah. And like Chris Abrams drain went 5 yards backwards, like after after hitting him. And like to Chris Abrams drain credit, Darnell Washington went backwards too, which is very hard to do. But I mean, he just went flying out of like the frame. But yeah. early on in the game too, the wide receivers dropped a lot of balls. I think they had that one wide receiver that had like a buffed punt or something.
McConkey dropped one.
He dropped one. And then there was a couple times where the defense was a little bailed out by some of the decision-making, number one of Stetson Bennett, and just the lack of execution by the wide receivers. The fumble, the fumble that was recovered by Mizzou's defense, that was Stetson Bennett's fault. I've never really thought Stetson Bennett's that great of a quarterback. Jordan Palmer was like trying to convince everybody that Stetson Bennett's like a Heisman Trophy winner. And I just never have seen that. He's going to sell used cars in Athens when he's done. He's not going to be an
like he could win the Heisman because, and I say this as someone who votes for it, most of the people who vote for it just vote for the quarterback of the best team. So, it's not, nobody votes for the best player. But he's, I mean, look, he won a national title, but quarterback wins are the dumbest stat ever. Like, there's 22 guys out there. Nobody keeps track of the defensive end's record. You know, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, you've got to quarterback play was not the difference in that game.
No,
on Saturday, I don't really know what was, except just a couple. Like, Georgia made a couple plays, and Missouri just failed to make a couple at the wrong time.
Yeah, and I think that. So going back to the defense, I still want to talk about the defense here. This team seemed like a different team than it did in the first 4 weeks. This a defense that Blake Baker was probably cooking some stuff up. They saw some stunts too that got some of these guys. Tyron Hopper had a couple free runs at Stetson Bennett. I really liked what I saw from the front seven. The front seven's nasty, I think. The defensive ends were playing very well. Man, I don't think you could be happier with the performance than when you get the number one team in the country and you basically have the lead on them the whole game. Yeah, they come up over the top, or like they end up winning the game. But, you know, you hold them like that the whole game, I don't think you could be very upset, especially when you talk about where you came from, where this defense came from even a year ago to even a week ago. You know, like, this defense has taken some big steps in the time that Blake Baker's taken it over.
Yeah, he deserves, I called it kind of an audition for a head coaching job. I mean, he's done a hell of a job. And that defensive line, I mean, from the jump, Christian Williams on the second play of the game was in the backfield. Trajan Jeffcoat and Isaiah McGuire, I thought, were all over the place. I thought Tyron Hopper was the best player in the game, which is saying something when you're playing Georgia. But, you know, we were down on the field because we always go down there to see what recruits are there and just kind of check out, you know, who's dressed, who's not dressed, all that. My guy Gerard Hamilton was standing there, and here comes God, now I can't think of his name, but Jalen Carter, just kind of like wandering through Missouri stretch lines and stuff. And Jaden Jernigan and Darius Robinson got in his face, and they're yelling at each other. He tweeted out video of it and stuff. They had to take Carter back to the Georgia locker room. These guys, and it, like, we were all talking on the sideline, and we're like, yo, don't poke the bear, man. Like, I know you can't just let them walk through your huddle and all that. So make a point, but A, what the hell is Jalen Carter doing? But B, also, like, don't make them mad. But I think that actually fired Missouri up, because they came out and it wasn't just, they were stopping guys, but I mean, they were all over the place defensively. They looked faster and more athletic than they've looked in any other game this year.
They didn't have anything to lose. And I think a lot of the times when you play like that, I mean, you're going to at least, you know, you're going to make a statement. Honestly, like, that crowd had to have played a role. Yes. They were pumped the entire sideline. I saw Cody Schrader up on benches jumping during the defense. Like, I mean, it was amazing. And there's no way that they didn't feed off of that energy. I mean, it was just great.
Yeah. You could tell on the TV broadcast that Fro was rocking, and you have something I hadn't seen like that in a long time, which is really great to see that happen. And kind of watching this defense and watching this team as a whole, seeing it seems like a different team, kind of made me rethink my expectations for this team. Not saying that I'm going to say, hey, they're going to be a bull team.
Be careful.
Gabe, you know that after every game, we make sweeping judgments on the rest of the season. You know this is how this works. But it made me get a little bit more confidence to say, hey, this team could beat Vanderbilt. Because as you guys know, I was not on the this team could beat Vanderbilt train a week ago. So if you look at the schedule moving forward, Gabe, did it kind of Are you managing your expectations better than I am? Basically, is what I'm asking.
I'm waiting for next week.
Okay.
Because, there's two parts to it. First of all, they deserve a lot of credit for playing with Georgia, and I'm not trying to take any of that away. But they didn't win the game. And if you win that game, it is the lead story on every college football show that night. If you lose that game, it's there, it's mentioned, but everybody kind of forgets about it pretty quick because teams struggle all the time. You know, I mean, Bama, Texas was a big story for a minute, and then it kind of went away. So what I want to see is I'm impressed they got up off the mat from what happened to them at Auburn. Eli Drinkwitz deserves a lot of credit for that. But they also had the number one team in the country coming to their place for a night game in front of a near sellout crowd. That's a lot easier to get up for than a middle of the road Florida team at noon in the swamp. So if Missouri, I said after the game, if they play that game seven more weeks, they're going to win every game the rest of the way if they play like that. But what if they come out and they spent everything they had on Georgia and it was a loss and they're flat at Florida? And I don't think that's out of the question. Like this team now, as hard as it was to get up off the mat after Auburn, now they got to do it again. Yeah. And that's tough. And it's what we talk about every week. Like last week doesn't impact next week. If you play that way, it raised what I think the ceiling is for this team. But we've still seen the ceiling of this team once and the floor three times. So you got to prove you're that team more than you're the other one.
And we struggle at winning away games. Let's just call a spade. Let's just call a spade a spade. So it doesn't, you know, make things any better. But I do want to say, and obviously we did lose that game and it sucked. But all I kept thinking about was, gosh, that would have been so cool to win that game with Samuel Mpemba in town. Like, it would have been so cool to win that game after Oklahoma just lost by 30 and there's major recruits from the state of Missouri committed to Oklahoma. Like it just, it was more of like less about so much winning the game because we went into it knowing we probably wouldn't, but so many other pieces that come with winning a game were was what I was kind of like thinking about after that game. It was less about the win column and more about kind of, you know,
because if you win that game, that's the kind of game that gets people to come back, right? Yeah. That say, man, I went to that and that was really fun. And I'm not saying there are people that say, well, I went and it was awesome, but they lost. So screw it. I'm never going back. That's not it. But a win could be season changing, maybe program changing. An almost win, maybe. It can be. I don't know. But again, I got to see what they do the next couple weeks before I'm convinced of it.
Well, let's talk about that. There were some big accounts on Twitter that were messaging me and just solely based off of this game being like, I want to go to a game in Missouri. Big Game Boomer is one of them. They're like, it looked so great that they want to come to a game, you know, and it would how amazing would it be if we could do that? And how many more extra wins would we get if we could do that? Right. Yeah, just like a regular game, yeah.
Right. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Looking at the schedule here, you know, going into this year, we knew they had a lot of road games, a lot of tough road games too, at Florida, as we mentioned. Then they have the bye week. They have host Vanderbilt, then have to go to South Carolina. They get Kentucky at home, then have to go to Tennessee. The Tennessee, South Carolina, and Florida games are all very tough road games. And looking at that going forward now, knowing kind of what we have about this team, we talked about this. We were kind of talking about this before we started in our production meeting, you could say, for the show, about what Missouri has to do to get bowl eligible, right? You can pencil in. I think you can pencil in a Vanderbilt and New Mexico State win, right? That'll get you to 4 wins. You have to steal 2 more wins, and those 2 wins have to come against Florida, South Carolina, Kentucky,
Arkansas.
Yeah.
You got to win 2 of those games.
Yeah. You have to win 2 of them. Do I think if that team plays, you know, if that team shows up again, do I think they can win 2 of those games? I do. Do I think that team will show up again? I don't know. I really don't know. That's the biggest what if, is what team is going to show up on a week-to-week basis.
And that's the question for every team in America, right? But the difference is, a team like Georgia, they don't have to necessarily show up to win. I mean, most of their game, they can walk on the field and they're probably going to be 8-4 to start the season for the most part, just talent alone. Missouri's got to play well. And so now he's got to figure out whatever happened last week, figure out something to replace. Hey, here comes Georgia and their All-American defensive linemen just walked through your huddle and you got 60,000 fans. Like, there has to be something else to get them up. Because if they lose at Florida this week, let's be honest, they're 2-4. And almost winning at Georgia is still... It doesn't do anything to further the goals of this season, but it gives you some hope that, hey, maybe they're better than anybody gave them credit for last week. But it proves, like, it's never as good as you think it is. But also, all the should we fire Eli Drinkwitz 12 minutes after the Georgia game ends talk a week ago, I mean, we said all along, they weren't as bad as they looked at Kansas State. And they probably aren't consistently as good as they looked Saturday.
But the game on Saturday gave me, like, looking forward to the Georgia game, the Kentucky game, or I'm sorry, the Florida game, the Kentucky game, and all of that. Man, they put a lot of hope in us. Yeah. To the regular fan, they gave us a lot of hope. And am I saying we're going to go into Florida and win that game? I don't know. But if they show up at home against Kentucky like that, if they show up at home against Arkansas like that, because Arkansas is really not that great of a football team. You know, they kept it close with them with Alabama after Alabama lost Bryce Young, but they're not unbeatable by any means.
Here's the secret about the SEC. There's only really 2 great teams every year. Yeah. Like, they like to tell everybody, well, our 12th place team can beat your 12th place team. I mean, probably, but your 12th place team still kind of sucks. You know, I mean, there's only, like, the whole thing about the SEC has been built on, well, our 10th place team can beat our 3rd place team. Yeah. I mean, we were talking before, the 9th place team in the Big 12 might be able to beat the 1st place team in the Big 12, but doesn't mean the Big 12 is great. You know, it means they have a bunch of teams that could beat each other on any given day. I think the SEC has 2 teams at another level, and I'm not sure there's – I mean, who's the 3rd best team in the SEC? Ole Miss, I guess.
Maybe. Probably.
You know?
Yeah.
Or Tennessee.
At this point. Yeah. Tennessee, and, like, I think Tennessee's good, but, you know, they're not. You can invent worlds in which a bottom half of the SEC team is going to beat them.
Yeah,
they're not gonna. I think the kids call it these days mid offs. I think everybody in the SEC is like, it's just a mid off.
Yeah,
yeah. I think, too, luckily for the SEC, both of their good teams are on other sides of the division. Unlike the Big Ten, two of their good teams are on the same side of the division, and they got one division that's absolutely bad. But yeah, that's I always think about these games. These Florida games are always weird games. It seems like something always weird happens in a Florida game, whether it's Missouri goes and blows them out. And it's just like, that's weird. That wasn't really supposed to happen. Or Florida blows Missouri out.
Or there's a fight and one coach trolls the other coach who just got fired. And yeah,
there's nothing normal happens in a Missouri Florida game. It's just, just the beauty of the beast, the nature of the game. Nothing normal is going to happen. So prepare yourself for the unexpected in this game. Florida got a good quarterback, better than Stetson Bennett. I'll say that right now. I'll die on that hill. Anthony Richardson hasn't played the best consistently, but he is a good quarterback. Something Mizzou's going to have to watch out for. The defense is going to have to watch out for. Florida's been in a lot of weird games this year. A lot of weirdly close games. The South Florida game. South Florida probably should have won that game. Utah probably should have won that game too against Florida.
It was close.
Cam Rising, is that his name? It makes a better decision like he usually does, and I think that they win that game. But nevertheless, Missouri goes to the Swamp. As you mentioned, Gabe, 11 a.m. kickoff. That's gonna be interesting. This game right here.
It's the best time to go there. I've been to a noon game at the Swamp, and it's dead. I mean, there's a lot of empty seats, and people, this is not a game Florida fans are going to be up for. You know, you should have every opportunity to go in there and play well. But again, man, I don't know. They're 20-year-old kids. Who knows what they're going to – they probably don't know what they're having for dinner, much less if they're going to play well next Saturday.
I feel like – I keep seeing all these tweets from Mizzou players that we hadn't really seen early in the season. And it really just seems like there's just a different vibe now. I think after that Auburn game, they just feel different. I don't know. Maybe they just weren't posting about it. Maybe someone was like, you need to post about how close you guys are to each other. I don't know. Because everyone's freaking out. But I mean, I just feel like there's so much more like connectivity between a lot of these players now. And I just think they're dying for one. I really do. I think we have a bunch of competitors on our team. I think Hopper wants to go into Florida and, you know, do the thing. He got a lot of crap for leaving. He got a lot of crap for leaving Florida to go to Missouri. You know, a program historically not as good, but well, in the SEC, just as good. Good point. I mean, I would love to go up a game on Florida. I would love to end this game on Saturday and be like, well, you know, we have a winning record against Florida, right? Like, I'd love to do that.
Nice.
Here's the thing to me. Like Barrett Bannister said on Saturday night, he said, you know, the water, it keeps building up, and eventually the dam's going to break, and you're going to get one of these. But it has to break, because the danger is, if it doesn't, the frustration level of, you know, we can't keep banging our head into this wall. And so, you know, like, I think they've gone in 4 weeks, they've gone from a team that forgot to show up to a team that lost on the last play to a team that lost late to an actual good team. So there's only one step left, but that step has to get taken at some point soon, because if it doesn't, you start to, you know, then all the excitement. I mean, you see it all the time. How many half teams can go through a season? At what point does the defense say, I don't know what else we can do, guys? Like, you got to help at some point, you know? And I don't get any sense of any finger pointing or anything. I'm just saying, at some point that dam does have to break, because otherwise that's where it ends up.
Your best offensive player can be a
kicker. We can point the fingers because we're not players, but...
Well, I mean, if
we know why we're not winning games,
you know which half of the team is the issue. There's no question.
Right. I think Ray Charles could figure that out. What side of the football it is. But no, I would just love to see some points be scored. And I think you're going to have to score some points, obviously, to win. Hot take by me. Wow. Watch out. You have to score some points to win.
Like, you're going to have to win games 24-20. Yeah. I don't. know that they can go out and beat anybody in this league 38-35, except maybe Vandy, you know.
I also would like to point out that last week we talked about that Georgia game, and I did say lots of weird things happen in those Georgia games, and I talked about all the weird ones. So I will tell you one thing, too. I was probably around the middle of the third. I was getting I wasn't like super optimistic, but I was already planning out tweets that I was going to post in my head if we won that game. And a lot of them was going to be not yelling, but you know, tweeting at Mizzou fans that sold their tickets and things like that. So,
I mean, hey, if you can make $500 and avoid thinking you're going to see your team get beat 48-7, you know.
and I understand the thinking of it, but I just kind of wanted, you know, the field to get rushed and stuff while people were, you know, sold their
tickets. Yeah, I was planning to go down on the field. To kind of be able to get the reaction and all that. It would have been cool. It feels like you were talking about at the beginning. It just feels like a missed opportunity to me. Yeah. You know, you're not in that position a lot.
Mm-hmm. And that's what the Drinkwitz's conversation, Jordan Rogers was like in the broadcast. I guess he was in the locker room and they did the thing where they did with RG3 where they ran him out with the team. I don't know if you guys saw that. Very, very odd. And then they started like calling the game just on the sidelines. Like everyone who was like on the broadcast was just like standing on the sidelines. I was like, how are they calling this game right now? But anyway, they must have had like a monitor or something. He said that Drinkwood's conversation to the team was just about how this is opportunity right here. Like this is an opportunity to take and kind of run with it. And I think that that's kind of what they did. They had an opportunity. They didn't quite take advantage of it, but they made me feel a little bit better about them. They made me feel a little bit better about the outlook moving forward. I looked up the line for this game from our friends at DraftKings. Minus 11 in favor of Florida at home.
It opened at 10. That's, yeah.
So it's pushed up to 11. Am I wrong in thinking that I feel like that's a little high?
I mean, I've predicted every game pretty much wrong, so who am I to ask, to be quite honest?
I thought it would be closer to 8.
It seems a little high, but like they don't build the big shiny buildings with all the lights because they're wrong all the time. You know,
it's true.
Well, they were wrong last week, so.
They were wrong last week.
By a lot.
Wrong by a lot last week.
I mean, I don't know. 9 out of 10 times they might be right, but. They weren't right.
Well, and you know, like a line's not a prediction. It's what can we get people to bet on both sides of so we don't lose any money. You know, so there it's not necessarily saying, hey, we think Florida is going to win by 10. It's, hey, we think enough people will think Florida will lose by 10 and the same number will think Missouri will lose by less than or win by 10. And the same number will think Missouri will lose by less than 10 and we'll take the juice and build more buildings.
So I'm curious to your guys' thoughts on this. Does Missouri have to win this game for you to feel good about them moving forward for the rest of the season? Is this a must win?
What do you mean feel good? Like to play in a bowl game or just to think it's going the right direction?
Or? I think to feel good about the direction of the program.
They don't have to win this one necessarily, but like they've got to find one or two of those that you were talking. I mean, I said at the beginning of the season, they've got to have a winning record for me to feel good. Yeah. Now, could they end up 6-6 and you feel okay? Yeah. But I still think at the end of the year, if you're 6-6, you'll kind of look back and go, Auburn, man, what happened? You know, yeah. And maybe Georgia. So yeah, they've got to come out and close the deal on one of these, and beating Florida is not the same as beating Georgia, but it would still make people take notice a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. I think they need to get the road win. And I think that's what it's not a must win, but if we're going to steal a road win, I find it more likely that it's going to be at Florida. I mean, it could possibly be at South Carolina. Like I won't count that one out. 'Cause, you know, we won there 2 years ago and whatnot, but I don't think it's unwinnable. And Drink needs to go out there and get the road win. And if he can get that road win, there's going to be a lot of people off of the fire Drink train and more in like, you're right. Like, okay, now we believe, like, let's finish the season strong and get into next year. I think there'll be a lot of people that'll feel that way.
I think if they win this game, there's a decent chance they're going to be 5-3 at the end of the month. Because, you know, you got Vandy, you're at South Carolina. Yep. Those are, you know, so if they're sitting 5-3, they played well 4 weeks in a row, and one of those was a close loss to the number one team in the country, then I think there's going to be a lot of, oh, hang on, we got something going here. But again, we do this every week where we just project the next 17 years based on what we just saw, and it usually ends up looking stupid.
It's how college football works. Maggie, do you have any Twitter questions before we head out of here?
Yeah, so actually that was kind of one. It led a little bit. So it was at Mizzou Mike 03. What makes this season a success? Does making a bowl make it a success? Does winning a road game make it a success? Multiple road games?
I can't sell 5-7 as a successful season. I just can't do it. Now you can do some things at 5-7 that I mean, it's really kind of about development. Does Luther become a better player? Cause like low key guy, all the drama last week, it's not, the fact is he's got to be better, yeah. You know, and it's a process. But everybody's out here screaming at the coach, and I'm not sure that's accurate, but is Luther a better player? Do you have a quarterback, whoever that quarterback might be by the end of the season? Do you feel like you have a quarterback? You know, so you can see some things that you feel good, but bare minimum for me, this team's got to be in a bowl game to feel like you're going the right direction.
I think it's a bowl game and a bowl win. I haven't had a bowl win in a feels like forever. When was the last bowl win?
It's been a bit, like 2014.
2014, I think.
Against Minnesota in the Citrus Bowl, I think.
Yeah, I think that's right.
It's been, that's, I mean, so we played ago. Texas in that Texas Bowl, and we went into it pretty confident.
Tom Herman and his stupid face. I hate Tom Herman.
I know. No.
I think you got to win a bowl game. From Drink's point of view, I think it maybe buys him an extra year if he does get a bowl game win.
By the way, College Game Day talked about the Luther Burden thing, which people saw how I felt about that on Twitter. But
yeah, that was
I thought it was extremely inappropriate and bad journalism.
Just so we can clear this up, like I've posted this on our site, but if there's people listening that don't subscribe to PowerMizzou.com, turn it off. You're not allowed to listen anymore. But if there are, like, from what I was told last week, the whole transfer stuff is so overblown and there's no thought of it. He's frustrated. He's not playing well. He was frustrated by all the talk he saw of people thinking he was going to transfer. And he said, yo, I need to clear out some of the social media stuff. Now, when you're 18, you might not quite realize as soon as you do that, grown men all over the country are going to assume the worst and run to their keyboards and panic, which is another discussion. So, but Luther's here the rest of the year, and people say, well, only the rest of the year. What happens? I don't know what happens after that. Every player in America might transfer after that. You know, I mean, look at what's happened the last few years.
Yeah, at this point, you don't want Lovett to go. There's multiple players you don't want to go. So, I mean, yeah, no, I agree. Thank you for clearing that up for us, Gabe, at Power Mizzou.
Yes, do what I can.
okay, I'm going to ask another question. At AR Rosen 76, what type of impact does Saturday night's atmosphere and on-field product have on recruiting?
It helps. I mean, when kids who are at that game are going to walk away and say, wow, that was cool. I'd like to see that again. Always when you have kids in on visits, there are programs that have all their visitors in during the season. Ohio State does it. Nebraska does it because they can bring them in and show them 85,000, 90,000 people in the stadium. And oh my God, Missouri tends to have its recruits in December because they can sell, hey, we're going to give you all this one-on-one attention. And let's be honest, most game days at Faroe, if they visit for a Mizzou game and then they go visit Tennessee and Auburn and somewhere else, you put your best foot forward with what you sell. So having a night like that definitely helps. But I think the key for Missouri is, what do you do at 3 o'clock on October 15th when Vanderbilt's in town? I know it's homecoming, so there'll be a decent number of people. I refuse to throw New Mexico State in there, but you know what's the turnout like for the Kentucky game? It needs to be, because Saturday night still wasn't a sellout and there were a lot of Georgia fans there. Like, if you want to do this, then yes, the team has to give you a reason, but also Saturday night needs to be more the norm than something we're talking about. Like, that was the coolest thing we've seen in 7 years.
Yeah, I agree.
By the way, just for our listeners, don't show up to Fro on October 15th because we don't have a game. We play Vanderbilt on October 22nd, so please show up for homecoming. Please show up for homecoming then. Okay, so this is the last question.
I mean, show up on October 15th if you want.
I mean, if you want,
we'll hang out,
check out the stadium.
But speaking of recruits, though, by the way,
CJ's is good.
We had some great basketball recruits in town this weekend, right? Basketball
thing was cool on Friday night.
That was really cool. I kept getting like videos and smart to put it there because when they put it at Mizzou Arena.
Arena 2,000 people on the quad looks a lot better than 2,000 people in Mizzou Arena.
Yeah. And like the laser show was awesome. So shout out to Mizzou basketball for men's and women's was there too, is correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Shout out to both of them. That looked like it was really cool. So. Here's the last question. It's just a personal question, but I thought it was kind of fun. So at @MIZ_CFIN, what is your favorite Mizzou helmet we've ever worn? We've had so many different styles of them. And
Gabe doesn't have any opinions on uniforms. I know really? This because I tweeted out about the uniforms.
Oh my gosh.
He hates it.
The helmets is literally a very tough. Helmets are a very popular conversation in my Mizzou group chats.
Wear pink jerseys and tutus, and if you go 11-1, everybody's gonna love it.
I mean, probably true. I'll go ahead and say mine. Well, so I have two. Well, kind of two. So back in July, I tweeted at Mizzou football and I asked for a script helmet, and I made a huge thing about it, like a big tweet. Everyone was retweeting and stuff. We got our script helmet. Wasn't my favorite script helmet that we could have possibly done. I know I feel bad like saying that, but they could have done a little bit better in the script helmet. So DM me, Mizzou football, if you're listening and you want help with a good script helmet. My other favorites are, I love the matte black with the chrome silver tiger. Not everybody's favorite, but I think it looks dope. And the white with the chrome silver tiger as well.
I'm a big fan. I know a lot of people like the Block M. Like, that's just a classic, you know, the Block M. People were upset when they went to the Tiger, but I like the Tiger on the side of the helmet. Or you go all the way back with the giant Tiger on the yellow helmet.
That was
was obnoxious.
No, I like
them. They wore those at Alabama.
Ones I like. Those are the chrome ones I like, the bigger Tiger. Yeah. I don't really like the oval Tiger, but also the Sailor ones. The Sailor Tiger. That's
Liberty Bowl.
They've had a lot of helmets.
Yeah, the Liberty Bowl one. That's why somebody asked it, because they were like, we've had so many helmets, and they really did want Gabe and Tucker's opinion. I guess Gabe's not going to give it, and I'm sorry.
I'll say this. The only uniforms that I remember thinking, those are really cool. I like the Stormtrooper uniforms they were. I think it was against BYU maybe at Arrowhead. The all-white. Those are cool. I liked the I can't remember what they called it, but like Nike combat uniforms or something they wore against KU with the matte gray helmet.
Yeah,
that was cool. I like those. But
there you go, Cole. You got.
I like it when they wear.
Answer for you.
I like it when they wear uniforms that don't have like all the school colors or the right colors, because people get really mad about it, and I enjoy that. So that's
there you go.
I would go for like coming out in like red and gray one time just to throw people off.
He would not be happy with that.
Yeah, no.
Northwest wears red sometimes.
Northwest
Missouri State. They'll wear a red paw. They'll do black and red. So I mean, they do that.
I support that.
I guess when you have a lot of national championships, you just do whatever you want to do. Yeah.
It works. Yep. So that was last question there.
Yep, that was it. Sorry for all those other questions that didn't get answered, but some of them felt like they were just rhetorical. So.
Some of them were questions.
I mean, some of them weren't questions, and I don't know what's going to happen with Wisconsin's coach.
I think I saw one of them. I think I saw one of them that said, "Why are you the way that you are?"
Well, Missouri travels down to the Swamp 11 a.m. You can check that out. I don't know what channel that's on, but I'm sure you can Google it and figure it out. So great podcast hosting by me for not having that ready for you. It feels like a CBS game. If I had to guess, it feels like it would be no.
No, it's on one of the probably ESPN SEC network type.
Great.
Channels.
Now I'm gonna have to Google it.
I mean, Florida, I'm just looking right. It's on ESPNU at 11 a.m.
All right.
There you go.
ESPNU, 11 a.m. There you go. Make sure to watch the game. We will be back next week. Maybe talking college hoops. Who knows? We'll see how the Florida game goes.
Hey, it is a bye week after Florida, so there's a natural little break point there.
Talk some hoops, some impressions from Mizzou Madness. We can get all that in there. But thank you for listening to this week's edition of Mizzou That's Hoop. We'll be back next week. So until then, we'll talk to you later.